Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star Wars Report. I'm Riley, with you here doing another quick introduction before we actually get into the show, something that we've been doing a bit. I just wanted to say a few things. First of all, we have a great show lined up for you. We talked to Steve Glosson. As a matter of fact, he's a special guest for the entire show, but what I want to make sure you guys do is stick around after the credits, so to speak, and give a listen to our interview with him. We had a really, really good time talking to him about his podcasting career and where it stands now and his thoughts on Star Wars in general. So we kind of delve away from our normal show format and do that special interview after the credits of the show roll. Also, I wanted to mention once again that we are going to be at Fan Days, and even sooner, we're going to be at Dragon Con in Atlanta. I mentioned this at the intro of the last episode. We have finalized our plans. We have some recording equipment to go. We're going to try to do some great Star Wars Report coverage. We're going to be at a lot of the big panels, and hopefully we can get audio. I'm not even sure what their regulations or requirements for that is, but hopefully we're going to get you some great audio from the panels. I know there's a Timothy Zahn panel where he's doing talking about Heir to the Empire. There's an Ask the Authors Q&A panel with Michael A. Stackpole, Kevin J. Anderson, Timothy Zahn, among many others. There's a fan groups panel. There are lots of non-Star Wars panels. There's Battlestar Galactica. There's Lord of the Rings. There's everything there. So we're trying not to get too overwhelmed when we're putting together our actual schedule. So yes, Dragon Con, we will be there. We will be out in force. It will be the first time that we're going to bring full convention coverage. And hopefully this will be a trend and we'll continue going on. And now is an excellent time to say that this episode, and not only this episode, but the possibility to do podcast coverage of Dragon Con and Fan Days and Celebration in the future and many others, is brought to you by ToyHut.com, Toy Hut with two T's. They are the source, the best place to get Star Wars action figures and memorabilia. Be sure to head over to ToyHut.com and find all kinds of stuff. They have everything from vintage, Power of the Force, they even have the new stuff, the new Clone Wars. Basically, if it's a Star Wars action figure, they'll have it. So head over to ToyHutWith2Ts.com. When you check out, be sure to mention that it was the Star Wars Report. I look at it as a way of saying thank you to us and thank you to them for supporting us, because the microphone I'm talking into right now, we would not have. Actually, I should say the digital audio recorder. So that's awesome. And those guys, their entire crew is awesome for being the first people to sponsor the Star Wars Report. So that's very exciting. Again, head over to ToyHutWith2Ts.com and be sure to mention that you heard about them on the Star Wars Report. And with that, we're pretty much going to go straight into the episode. Enjoy. And one final mention on Fan Days, the other convention, it's October 8th and 9th in Dallas, Texas this time, and we'll be flying out there a day early, and we'll be heading around there, hopefully doing a fan meetup. We haven't knocked down all the details, but stay tuned on our Facebook page, watch us on Twitter, and we're going to see if we can't pull together a meetup. I know we have Chris and Matt from the Sarlacc Pit there on board, which is very exciting. And so there's going to be a sort of podcast meetup of sorts, and we're in talks, put it that way, in talks with maybe some Clone Wars celebrities to come to that event. So who knows, Friday afternoon, maybe Friday evening, we might be doing a meetup. Stay tuned, and we'll be sure to talk about it much more as our plans come together. All right, well, I've been babbling on quite long enough, so I'll go ahead and let you guys get into episode 8 of the Star Wars Report. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 9th. I believe it's the 9th. I don't know.
No. This is the 8th.
The 8th?
The 8th.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. So, the terms of a president, typically. We haven't even hit the part double digits yet, and I'm already forgetting the episode numbers. I'm just leaving that in, guys, and we're just rolling with this.
Chuckling in the background at my utter incompetence is Mr. Mark Herleman, our third wheel, our defender of the EU. Welcome to the show, sir.
Always glad to be here.
And we have a very special guest this time. A very special guest. Mr. Steve Glosson from every single podcast known on to man. No, not quite. But from Geek Out Loud, an awesome podcast. The second podcast I ever started listening to, by the way.
Oh, what was the first?
The Forcecast.
Second fiddle to none,
sir. It's quite an awesome show. If you are a geek at all, you should be listening to Geek Out Loud. But also joining me, as always, my dear sister and co-host for the show, Bethany. Welcome, welcome.
Well, thank you for almost but not quite forgetting about me.
No.
I am glad to be here. Oh, shut up.
Never.
He's just shuffling it up on you.
Just kind of changing things up a little bit. We've got a lot of awesomeness coming up in this episode. All kinds of Star Wars news. Now, I've been gone for forever, it seems. For pretty much 3 or 4 weeks out of the summer, which seems like the whole summer to me, doing all kinds of different summer activities in school. So I've missed a lot of news. So I'll come back and my Google Reader page has 500 unread items. And most of which are from theforce.net. So this is a little bit of the catch-up episode. We just recorded two episodes that have aired recently. And then, of course, through the magic of past and future recording, we just released our interview for Steven Stanton, a.k.a. Captain Talk. So that was a good time. But it's good to be back. Good to be back in the chair, back in the studio. And couldn't be more excited for this episode. Mark, you want to kick us off for some of the news?
Sure. First up, we've got some updates. EU Cantina reports that the Star Wars book Facebook page has posted their fourth mini excerpt from Fate of the Jedi Ascension, which is now out. And it was a small one. But the more touching one that was Scourge, Star Wars Scourge. We actually have a title for Jep Grubb's upcoming novel. And the novel is going to take place prior to the New Jedi Order and feature a new Jedi Knight named Mander Zuma. According to Del Rey, it's about a murdered Jedi and the investigation into the Hutt's criminal enterprises. So that's pretty good stuff. We were talking about this yesterday, at the time of this recording yesterday on EUcast, we did a little live show, and I was going on about the Hutts, and I'm really curious to see where they go with this in the Hutts because of all the little recent tweaks to what the Hutts, what we know about the Hutts in the Clone Wars. So it's I hope they play with that.
Yeah, I think I'm actually fairly intrigued by this idea. Are there very many? I'll ask you, Mark, the EU guy. Are there very many Hutt-centric novels, or do they not really fly off the shelves?
No, there's not too many. I mean, there's been some where the Hutts have been main characters and such. I believe there's like a couple Jabba comics and stuff like that out there. But for the most part, no. I mean, I'd be interesting to see an Old Republic novel with Beldoran the Hutt, the Jedi Hutt. And maybe, chronicle his fall or something. I forgot to mention, though, that Scourge will be scheduled for a release in April of 2012 in paperback. So that won't be seeing hardcover.
Okay, cool.
Interesting. That's a bit of a change for Star Wars books.
Yeah.
Going to the paperback first?
Yeah, straight to paperback.
Well, it seems that they do that with the standalones. You'll see that Knight Errant went straight that way. Some of the standalones will occasionally go straight to paperback. They used to do it more often, actually, but it seems like they've been riding the pony of 9-book series where all of them are hardcovers. I mean, that's... Yeah. The last two 9-book series kind of changed that for everybody. So, I mean, with New Jedi Order, it was only 5 hardcovers and the rest were all paperback.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think they are changing that on purpose. Steve, are you much of an expanded universe guy?
Do you like... When...
Sort of.
I kind of keep up with what goes on. The last series, I was totally into like everything that came out. Not comics so much, but novels. I kept up with religiously right up until the end of the New Jedi Order series. And at that point, we were hip deep in the prequels coming out. And, episode 2 was on the horizon. Episode 2 had come and gone. And then, episode 3 and then the Clone Wars. And so it's like I'm getting my Star Wars fix
Yeah.
Without having to wade through. And I tried. I tried to read, to get into the, not the Fate of the Jedi, but what was the last one?
Oh, yeah, the Legacy of the Force series.
Yeah. Legacy of the Force series. And I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. I didn't like Jason's journey. It's like, this is kind of dumb. I like they brought brought the chick from the Marvel Comics back in. I enjoyed that. But at the end of the day, I was just like, this is, they're really, to steal from comic books, they're really, you know, decompressing this story too much. It didn't move fast enough to be a Star Wars story.
Yeah.
And so, like I say, I'm getting a Star Wars fix every Friday night on the Clone Wars. You know, the prequels were coming out at the time, and it's just, you know, I've kept up with the main events. You know, like, I know who's dead and I know who did what and I know how this happened, but I haven't really, you know, sought them out and read them myself. I did read the Legacy series from Dark Horse,
with
Cade Skywalker, and really enjoyed it.
Has some excellent reviews, but I'm kind of right there with you, Steve. We're a little bit kindred spirits in that everybody else on the panel here is caught up in Fate of the Jedi, and I'm the guy who dropped off. I did back at Vortex. I was never quite able to finish it, and I kept telling myself, I even said it on Eric Tons, I'm going to get through it, but it was so difficult to keep following the story because it was so slow. I like the word you chose there, the decompressed. That really is a good way to describe it, because it's difficult to even follow what's happening because there are so many different storylines going, or at least for me.
I wouldn't know what the Legacy of the Force series, because I think I read Sacrifice was my first one of the Legacy of the Force, and I really, really liked that one. And then I read the last two, I believe. So I'm not certain what order that is. But I have read all of the Fate of the Jedi books so far, but I have not started Conviction. I have it, but I haven't started it.
When I was doing the Legacy of the Force, I got through the first two books, and I was just like, I can't take a geriatric Boba Fett running around, you know, trying to find a new arm or whatever he's doing. And it was just like, I don't mean to be overly critical. That's kind of, I'm speaking in hyperbole there, but it was just everything drug so much. And I got to be honest with you, there are a few little things they've introduced that I just don't like. I don't like this force walking thing that the Jedi do.
They went backwards on it too. I mean, they changed it up like three different times throughout the series.
Yeah, it's just, I also feel like there's been this big divide that has taken place between people like me, who, I don't mind the EU. It's like, have it. It's great. I'm glad that Star Wars is out there. I'm glad to see Star Wars on the bookshelf. But then there are the people who are like, the EU is it, man. You know, that's what it is. And I'm just like, okay, that's cool. It's it for you, but it's not it for me.
You EU hater, you.
Right. And so, you know, and then there are the people who put the petitions out on Facebook to, dear George, please don't mess with the EU anymore. And it's like, don't tell the creator what to do with his story. You know, that's like, that'd be like someone going and telling, you know, if he were still alive, going to Tolkien and being like, could you make your books more like the movies? Could you take out Tom Bombadil? Could you take out Sharky, because we like the way it was done in the movies a lot better in the extended editions? You don't do that. You know, you don't go to the creator and say, you're doing it wrong. Because guess what? He did it right. And, you know, if he wants to change a few things up, let him and deal with it. You know, you've got your books. Did you enjoy the story? Yes. Okay, good for you. You know, and that's kind of where I come at. It's like, if you enjoy it, that's great. But understand that it's not a matter of life and death that these things all line up perfectly with what Dave Filoni and crew are doing on the Clone Wars.
See, I'm right there with you, Steve. I signed the petition myself, but I knew it wasn't going to do anything for the exact same reasons you just stated. I mean, it was one of those things. It's like, well, I'll throw my voice at the right. I don't think George has to limit himself, but for me, it was more, you've got this great expansive universe and employees who will scrounge it for you. You know, why not use those and then let continue to go crazy with your thoughts, but use what all you have at your disposal. Don't just keep recreating the pony as you go. I mean, but at the same time, you know, it is George's universe. He can. And every time he does, we see awesome things. And then there are times where he actually, you know, basically sets in stone something that the EU fanatics have wanted forever. You know, me and myself, the black Darksaber, you know, when George put that out there, it was like, finally, you know, we've been wanting this forever. The closest we got was in Darkness, the really dark blue lightsaber of Alima Ra that was almost black. Yeah. It's like, now George gave it to us. We can do it now. We can roll with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Steve, you sound, that sounds remarkably close to sanity. I don't know if we can accept that. I don't know if we can accept this on air. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about
really
that.
Polarizing here.
Well, listen, any sanity I have is going to be balanced out by the guy over in Oregon.
That's true.
It's so true. Yeah, and I'm actually looking forward to Scourge. The standalones I'm much more likely to get into, I think, than these very long series as we've discussed at great lengths before. Who's heard of the Smurfs?
Who hasn't? Well, I mean,
I love the Smurfs. I hadn't.
Yeah, Harrison Ford has not, evidently. Because on Conan O'Brien a couple weeks ago, well, we'll just have to play the clip, but Harrison Ford's been kind of making the rounds. He's truly expressed his true feelings about Chewbacca on the Jimmy Kimmel show. which was pretty awesome, but with
that whole clip, it had to be a little cathartic for him, because Harrison Ford has made no bones about the fact that, you know, I've moved on from the character of Han Solo. I think he's a little too curmudgeonly about it sometimes. I think he gives Indiana Jones way too much of a pass on some things.
Perhaps he doth protest too much.
But yeah,
that's,
sure.
That's
and
just the way I look at it.
But at the same time, it. You know, what these guys, I saw an interview with Harrison Ford several years ago on Conan, of all places. And Conan O'Brien asked him, this was way back when Conan was on NBC before he was The Tonight Show and everything. And he said, have you ever just wanted to do some crazy movie? And, you know, and he did like, you know, woo, you know, Conan O'Brien. And Harrison Ford was like, are you kidding? I'd love to do something like that. And, you know, and ever since then, he has, especially with Conan, he has a relationship with Conan O'Brien that, you know, these guys just know how to get stuff out of him. They know how to draw out the funny side of Harrison Ford. Jimmy Kimmel did it with the Chewbacca thing. And with this Smurfs thing, like, Conan O'Brien broached territory that no other interviewer would have broached. And the way it comes about is he's asking about cowboys and aliens and the fact that Smurfs, opened up against it. And did
really well.
Yeah, and Harrison Ford's reaction was great.
Yeah, actually, let's take a
listen. My son, to see the Smurfs. He got into my movie for free, early.
Uh-huh.
And so she took him to see the Smurfs.
That doesn't seem right. That's the movie that's up against you this last weekend. And so some of the money that went to the Smurfs came from your son. That doesn't seem right to me. I'd be mad if I were you.
We're going to try and get it back.
If you want to take out any anger or rage...
He's picking up the Smurf doll and proceeds to tear its innards out.
Poor Papa Smurf.
Yeah, I like the way that Harrison Ford didn't and by the way, Riley, great segue from the whole EU discussion into the Smurf discussion.
I like to keep things highbrow here.
Yeah.
Well, now that you mentioned the EU, I'm kidding.
he just looks at it. He takes it from Conan. He looks at it and kind of looks at the back of his head, and just with one just manly pull, the head pops off.
I know.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, I was like, there's some pent-up rage there.
Yeah.
I've been much more impressed with Harrison Ford these days. I was reading, it was like the AARP Health magazine or something. I was over at the neighbor's house talking to them, and they just had the Harrison Ford cover. I can't even remember the name of the magazine, but in it I read about his private pilot's license and how much he likes to fly and out on his ranch and... I was like, well, that's cool. I would love to own a helicopter. That'd be cool. And then I read that he volunteers in search and rescue, which is right up my alley, because that's what I do through Civil Air Patrol and through other organizations. I love doing that kind of thing, volunteering search and rescue, we have a good time. But I was like, that's cool. And then I read further in this article where he actually, like there's this one person who was lost in the mountains.
And heard
off in the distance the whoop, 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 whoop. And the helicopter, I just had this vivid image of a helicopter whooshing up. And Harrison Ford with the Indiana Jones hat just whipping down, because that's pretty much what happened.
What I see more is him coming in and saying, "You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing." he also after the earthquakes in Haiti, and they were trying to get all kinds of relief flown in and everything. He was flying doctors in.
Oh yeah.
To Haiti right after the earthquake last year. So yeah,
he's
a man's man. And. And like you say, he volunteers time to search and rescue and all this other stuff. He's a great guy. I mean, you know, he's got a reputation as a curmudgeon, but he's obviously a great guy. He dresses up for Halloween. He's done so for the past few years and goes out with his kid, trick or treating. And, that's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah,
I wish he liked Han Solo more than he does.
I think we all do, but he does get kind of a bad rap from the fan community. But I don't really see him going around talking smack about any of his films. I just don't think he really focuses on them. We were in our interview with Steven Stanton, his buddy Rick Fitz from Star Trek. Shh, don't tell anybody. Was in on the interview. He was there in the studio with Steven and. At one point, Rick Fitz knows Han Solo, knows Harrison Ford from some various things that they've both been in, but he talked about how Harrison just doesn't really focus on acting as much as most actors do, because acting for him is just, at this point, evidently just something you do once every couple of years, and then you're done, and he doesn't seem to really focus on it because he's doing things like flying helicopters to Haiti and having fun on his ranch and stuff, and I kind of like that, because... It seems like so many actors just kind of get trapped in the Los Angeles, Hollywood circle, and that's just all they are and all they do. And so I kind of like the idea of having Han Solo / Indiana Jones hangs out at his huge ranch and flies helicopters and does search and rescue. That's kind of cool.
Or picture.
Look in the sky, it's the Ford light! Wait, for the Ford copter!
Who cares? Alright,
yeah.
I had to throw one in.
Yeah, just picture Harrison Ford coming up to your door dressed as Han Solo or as Indiana Jones, and he says trick or treat and his kids with him. You would give him every piece of candy you had in your house, I guarantee it.
I'd be like, well, dude, that's the best costume ever.
Yeah. You look so much like
him. I saw some pictures of some of the things he dressed up as, and he dresses in such a way that you can't tell it's him.
Ah,
he went
smart.
1 year as a Lakers super fan. He went as peas in a pod 1 year, and like you really couldn't tell if Calista Flockhart had not been next to him and you're able to tell it was her, you wouldn't have been able to tell it was Harrison Ford at all.
Wow.
And so, you know, he does that so he can actually go out with his kid without getting mobbed by people on the street and that sort of thing. And, you know, you got to think, I mean, look at Mark, Star Wars fans are crazy.
Indeed.
And anytime he goes out in public or anytime he has any interaction, I don't blame the guy for not going to cons and not doing so, because you'd get murdered if you were him. The Star Wars Q&A he did Q&A he did for the 30th anniversary, you know. I mean, the mob was just so pressing, he had to get on to everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he had to step up and he had to start doing some Dr. Jones from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember hearing that audio and just kind of being disappointed, because it's a segment of the Star Wars fan community that I was just honestly just disappointed in, to hear everybody clamoring for the autograph and everybody wants to get theirs. And that was kind of disappointing, and it was very nice of him to come out and do that, because
I will see everybody in turn.
I remember that.
That's the side of the cons and stuff like that that keep me leery about going. I haven't gone to one yet, but that's the side that I'm always like, man, I don't know if I could. There's a claustrophobic side to me that I don't think I could be around that many people, like going nuts for something. I'd just be like, I got to get out of here now.
The thing. Like a celebration, as I'm sure Steve can attest to, it's the atmosphere is very different, or at least for the most part, and that's not the case in other sci-fi cons.
Yeah, I'd have to say that. Celebration 5 is the only convention I've been to so far, but I never saw anything like that For instance, Riley and I were trying to get our picture taken with Ashley Eckstein because she was there at her booth, but someone else was trying to get an interview with her, and there were a couple of people behind me and Riley who were also trying to get
in the face. Yeah.
No, but the person behind us noticed the people off to the side who were trying to get an interview, and apparently they'd been there for a while. And the person behind us was like, "Oh, hey, look at those people. They're trying to get an interview. We should leave or make some room or whatever." So we all kind of made room and pushed back and told everybody, "Oh, hey, there's someone trying to interview." So everyone was very polite and, you know, walked away, and they didn't complain or anything. So I've been exposed to, I guess, what I've been told was a very good con with very nice, polite fans who didn't clamor and scream and jump up and down and faint all over the place.
Well, the facilities in Orlando were so good because they were so big and spread out. I was at Celebration 3 in Indianapolis, and it was a madhouse. It was just packed. You couldn't walk a step without bumping into someone. There were line issues. There were store issues. There were it was a good. We had fun, but it was just like really packed. I didn't go to C4 because it was in L.A., but I went to C5. Down in Orlando, and was just blown away at the difference. Now, there were a few less people there than there were in Indianapolis, but the convention center itself is a lot bigger, and so there was a lot more room to move around, and so people didn't feel so crushed, and I think that took away from the stress of trying to get to some of these people. And the Clone Wars folks are so gracious with their time, and they're such gracious people that, you know, I stood out in the hallway and had a conversation with Dee Bradley Baker on the last day. We just were sitting there chewing the fat. I sat there and talked to Dave Filoni, you know, just kind of jawing with him. And it was like no big deal. Awesome. You know, and there were people who were walking by who were like, "I think that's Dave Filoni," you know. But no one stopped and interrupted the conversation. No one stopped and tried to interrupt the flow of what was happening, what was going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's just Star Wars. Even when there's something, you know, even when a great Darth Vader comes in and there's pictures to be taken, everyone kind of backs up, lets the kids go first, you know, and then, you know, if they've got a second, they'll run up there and have their picture taken and that sort of thing. You guys are going to Dragon Con in a couple of weeks, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
We'll talk more about that later. But yeah, I'm kind of nervous because Dragon Con has a polarizing reputation. It's grown so much in the past couple of years.
Have you ever been?
No.
No.
This will be first time.
Yeah, have fun.
Okay. Yeah, because it's probably going to be a very different experience because there's so many different types of fan communities there.
Yeah.
Have you been, Steve?
Yeah, we went two or three years ago. We were there. We had some panels we were actually on.
Cool.
Starkville's House of El, and at the time Skynex for the Terminator podcast, over the Terminator show that was on that we did. We were on some panels there, and I got to tell you, from the moment I set foot onto the streets of Atlanta, it was just like, what is going on? You know, a lot of neat costuming, and then it's like a lot of people are just like, I'm going to use this as an excuse to walk around half naked. And it was so – there at the Hilton where it was then, it was just so crowded. And it just – I don't know. Like, I didn't experience any panels or anything just because by the time we were through with our panels, I didn't want to stick around to have to wade through the masses to do anything else, you know?
Yeah.
And so what it was for me, Dragon Con was just a neat time of just – meeting some people that were listeners to the shows and that sort of thing, and what I took away from that was just some great memories of hanging out with some friends that I made. But the con itself is not a bad con. There's just so much going on that it can be overwhelming, and you really need to kind of make a plan of attack before you go, you know that this is what you want to do and this is when you want to do it, because otherwise it can be very overwhelming.
I can only imagine, because it's the same attendance, actually bigger attendance than Celebration 5. It's usually 30,000-40,000 people divided into three different hotels in downtown Atlanta, just to give listeners an idea. So I've heard it's pretty chaotic. We've got our game plan because we're big Lord of the Rings fans, so we're going to some Lord of the Rings panels, and then some obviously all the big Star Wars panels we're hoping to get to. And then there's a whole podcasting track with some of the biggest podcasters in the biz, so to speak, that I'm interested in hearing. It's called a biz.
Yeah,
you've
but
been around long enough, Steve. This is not a biz.
No, this is a hobby.
Yep.
Unless you're Kevin Smith or Adam Carolla, this is a hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like your phrase, plan of attack, because that's exactly how Riley and I are treating Dragon Con. It's like, okay, here are all of these different fan tracks. And a fan track is basically, if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, you look at all of their Lord of the Rings programming in chronological order. If you're a Star Wars fan, they have the same thing. They have so many different tracks that they have literally thousands upon thousands of hours worth of programming that's going on simultaneously.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this and thinking,
oh my
goodness.
Do you guys cosplay or anything like that?
Not yet.
We would love
to get some Stormtrooper armor.
Yeah, 501st.
Every Halloween, okay. That's about as far as I get.
Sure. Yeah. Well, but you still have us beat, Mark.
At Dragon Con, it's like you're in the minority if you're not wearing a costume.
Oh, wow.
There's really that many people and from all walks of fandom. You will have your picture taken with Gandalf. You will have you'll have your picture taken with Galadriel. You'll have your picture taken with maybe even a Sauron. You know, that's the level of fandom that comes out. You know, then you'll also see the Harry Potter people over here and the steampunk people over here and the comic book heroes and the 501st is well represented. And you know, so there's like I say, you feel like you're in the middle. You feel like the loser if you don't have a costume.
Yeah.
And so, but we, you know, it was fun. We had a good time. We shot a few things there for Starkville's House of Ale, where we uploaded some video and everything. But
cool deal.
We were doing a bit because my co-host, or I was his co-host, I guess. He was Han on that show to my Chewie. And, and Derek and I had never really met face to face. And so the whole bit was I was walking around Atlanta and walking around Dragon Con looking for him. And so it's just shot after shot with this bouncy, happy music of me just kind of bebopping with a stupid grin on my face all around Atlanta like I'd never been anywhere before, just looking at everything. And I get directions from a stormtrooper, you know, and I get this. And, you know, you see me walk up the street. You see me walk down the street. You see me go through a revolving door and come right back out as though I don't know how to use a revolving door. But one of the things we had to cut is there was a dude dressed as Captain Jack Sparrow. And I mean, and he looked like Johnny Depp had stepped off the screen. And we were in an elevator, and my whole thing was I'm just sitting there with a stupid grin on my face, kind of looking out the elevator and, you know, looking around. And we're like, could you just kind of stand there with him, you know, looking at him? Well, he sits there the whole time and feels like he's got to talk to the camera. And I'm like, and I almost turned to him and looked like I almost broke character and said, you are not Captain Jack Sparrow. We don't want you to act like Captain Jack Sparrow. We want you to act like you know that you're in costume and you're looking at me like I'm the idiot. But I didn't. I just sit there and let him be stupid.
Captain Jack wouldn't behave.
Yeah.
What you didn't know is that was actually
Johnny Jack.
What you didn't know is that was actually Johnny Depp sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm a little bit trepidatious, but I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be a good time. You know, make friends, meet people. And have a blast.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Cool. Well, moving right along, have you seen the Lego Star Wars Padawan Menace by any chance, Mark or Steve?
That's a no.
I
saw it. It's still on my DVR.
Cool. I just now saw it because I was out of town doing pararescue training. How's that? I was lost in the desert of New Mexico. Wishing I was somewhere else when this thing aired.
You're wishing you were in Oshkosh.
Wishing I was in Oshkosh, yes, actually. And so I was not very sure I would like this because the Lego format makes really good 2 or 3 minute bits, but I wasn't sure a whole 30-minute episode would be good. But when I got back, I just watched it earlier this afternoon, and boy, was I wrong.
I know that bit was so funny. Mark, you've got to see this at some point.
Yeah, Mark will try to stay. Oh, wait. Are we worried about spoilers here, honestly?
No. I'm listeners, are you? I'm not hearing anybody shouting out in protest.
For whatever level of canon this is, we might have to.
Look, it's Robot Chicken level canon, is what
it's
it is.
N. Yeah, or Infinity. You know, don't worry about it, just enjoy. Sit back and
do it. That's how I say with just about anything. Don't worry about the canon of it. Just if you enjoy it, enjoy it.
Yeah, we love to tease about the canon levels.
Yeah.
We always have to turn to Mark because Mark is a good EU fan, he knows the canon levels, although thankfully he doesn't get stuck up on them. But it's good to know.
He does. He just holds back.
That's true.
Yeah, he's slowly turning to the dark side on you guys as you cause the anger in him to rise.
See, I know deep down that the retcon's coming, so I like to ride the momentary panic of the masses, because it's I know in like 2 days or 4 weeks they're gonna have some little, oh, by the way, we just put this little article out and it explains everything, why so-and-so came from Dathomir now, and it's so funny to watch, like, the newer fans that get into the fandom side of things. They will ride that anger for, like, months or years. You're just like, really? You gotta let that go, man. The retcon already came and went, buddy.
Mark lives for the retcon, but he does. You are known to surf up some waves here and there, but we love you for it. But yeah, the LEGO Star Wars, the Padawan Menace. Now, I had no idea what it was. I just clicked play and watched it. So there is actually dialogue, which I thought it would have been very interesting if they pulled a Wally and just tried to do it without any dialogue at all.
Although, was my only concern with it, was that they would do the grunts and stuff from the. From the games.
The crowning moment of the special was when, after talking with full dialogue for about 20 minutes, the senator on the senator pod in the Galactic Senate, I said Senate a lot there, came up for his grand speech and then started going, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I love the slow motion moment where I think it's Yoda.
Oh, the totally awesome moment.
Little Padawan goes,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, because it's in slow motion. He's like,
yes.
I like the part where little. This is, yeah, I guess that's a spoiler. Oh, well. Where little says, I have a bad feeling about this.
Yeah.
And the stormtrooper.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
Well, I said it first.
But I thought of it first.
And then Yoda starts yelling at them.
There are a lot of great moments. So if you haven't, definitely go check it out and watch.
Oh, Commander Cody. I can see my house from here.
Yeah.
And all I could think is when they were taking off, I'm like, what about Cody?
I know. It's like Cody was just completely left behind. I never saw him again.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, it was definitely much, much better than I actually thought it would be.
Well, and I'll tell you guys this. Have you guys had a chance to get to Star Tours?
No.
Star Tours?
No, unfortunately.
Well, the scene where, at the opening, when 3PO takes off from Coruscant and they're flying through the battle and everything. That is taken directly from Star Tours. I mean, that is how Star Tours begins.
Oh, really?
And it was really cool to see that, having gone down to Orlando earlier this summer and ridden the ride and everything. So,
yeah. Okay.
Nice.
Coolness. Yeah, and they actually already have announced a Blu-ray DVD release date for September 16th. So coming right around the corner, you can actually pick this thing up. And they actually have a number of bonus features, including The Hunt for R2-D2, Bombad Bounty. That sounds interesting. Star Wars in 2 minutes and Star Wars The Clone Wars in cinema. That's the one that kind of jumps out to me the most. I wonder if that will be footage from some of the screenings they've done. Who knows?
Do they have a price on that? I wonder what a price for
Amazon. No, I'm sorry. Walmart.com actually has $13.
Oh, okay. Right, wow.
Because it's only a half hour special, so it's not.
Yeah, I was wondering what sort of pricing they choose with something so much shorter.
Yeah.
Well, and did this fly under the radar for anyone else?
Well, it did for me, but everything's kind of been under the radar. I only just saw this yesterday when I was trying to comb through my Google Reader. And so
I don't really frequent all the news sites as much as I used to, and you know, I'm not as consumed with like all the news that I used to be. I kind of just sit back and enjoy stuff now. And I didn't know anything about this until I heard about it on some other podcast. And then by that time, it had already aired. And I was like, oh, man, I hope I can see this again. And, you know, thankfully, Cartoon Network played it again, and I was able to catch it on DVR. But
yeah.
Yeah.
It just kind of jumped out at us, though. Yeah, you're right.
It seems like, you know, to me, and I'm like, this should have been a bigger event than it was.
Yeah.
But now I also don't watch a lot of Cartoon Network, you know, except now with the Thundercats, I do. But, And with the Clone Wars, but that's really the only time I watch any Cartoon Network or with shows like that anymore. And so maybe that was the only place they were really doing any advertising for it. But it completely just passed me by.
Yeah, and I love this, the concept of just like a humorous 22 minutes fun time. And it's perfect for a filler between seasons.
Yeah.
Something like that to look forward to. So, yeah, you're right. I don't watch Cartoon Network hardly ever. I usually watch the episodes on the website when they air, because we don't have cable here at the house.
Sadness.
Yeah. But we can always go over to my grandmother's and bum off her cable on Friday nights.
So, there's my mammy. Hey, mammy. The thing about it is like it left me wanting to see more. You know, like it was so much fun. It didn't have the, you know, you'd never dipped into the adult humor of a Robot Chicken or a Family Guy parody.
Yeah.
But it was still funny, you know, and it was fun. And it's like, I could watch more Lego Star Wars, you know, if they wanted to make more of these. The animation was incredible. You know, they used like the real life backgrounds in some instances, or they looked real. You know, photorealistic backgrounds with these little digital characters, and it was just, I enjoyed the heck out of it, and would love to see them do more.
Me too. Wouldn't it be interesting if Squishies was made out of Legos?
Star Wars Detours. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I heard you say that, Mark. You got my squishy
blocks.
Yeah.
this is probably what Star Wars Detours is going to be. Not necessarily with Legos, but this kind of humor where it doesn't matter. You just get to see these characters in a goofy, you know, Mad Magazine type way.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure I would like that kind of thing. And where you get to see
Yoda in Yoda voice say peace out. That really cracked me up.
Yes.
But, well, and did you catch how he messed up C-3PO's name? Like he said C-3PO in Yoda speak.
Yeah, like 3POC.
Yeah, and I was just like, that's great. That is, you know, it's little nuances like that that just made it so much fun.
Yeah, and I've been actually hunting around on the internet, and I can't really even find the creative voices. I could recognize voices.
Yeah, I recognized
like
a few.
The absence of James Earl Taylor as Obi-Wan, that was kind of disappointing.
That was noticeable.
Yeah, but it was Tom Kane as Yoda.
Yes, it was. Yeah, and I definitely heard Dee Bradley Baker there as the clones.
Dee Bradley Baker was there as the clones. Anthony Daniels, of course, was 3PO.
Anthony, yes,
because no one else can do 3PO.
Yeah,
and I didn't really pay much attention to anything else.
Was it just me, or was BJ Hughes back? I kind of heard a little bit of BJ there.
With the Jar Jar?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
Jar Jar.
Yeah, but this special made me much more open to the idea of a concept of a Star Wars kids show like Squishies or Star Wars Detours that's been rumored, because this was executed so well that it boosted my faith, because... I was looking and trying to see if Seth Green was behind this, but I can't find any information. You guys can send us an email if you can figure out who on earth made this thing. All right, moving on. Red Tails has a release date of January 20th, 2012, right? There's something else happening in January. What was that? Oh, yes. The Phantom Menace, the same month. It's kind of competing with themselves. I thought
Phantom Menace was coming out in February.
Yes. Early, I think it's February 14th. I'm glad you caught me there. It's not the same month. It's within a month period.
Yeah.
Which does kind of surprise me. But Red Tails, as I've not been hesitant to say at all, is one of the films I'm most looking forward to in 2012. There's The Hobbit, Red Tails, and The Phantom Menace back. That's going to be fun, too. But Red Tails... just looks like an awesome film. And they released a trailer. Have you guys seen the trailer by any chance?
No, I wasn't aware they already had one out.
Oh, okay. So here's what we're going to do. Have you seen it, Steve?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. I just popped Mark the link in the show notes, and I'm going to see if I can get started. I bet they're going to play another stupid pre-roll ad. We're giving away all these freebies. No. Thank you, Yahoo. No pre-roll ad. So I've got it at the beginning, Mark. Just pull it up, and you can watch it right along with us. And then that way the listeners can also... listen to it and watch it with our commentary if they would like. All right, starting the trailer on zero. In 3, 2, 1, go. This following preview has been approved for all appropriate audiences by the Motion Picture Association of America.
Bandits! Hundreds of them! 6 o'clock!
It's got German markings.
Let's get them! Where are the damn fighters going?
Is there anything left of our escort? Mayday!
So,
Mayday! Prepare to bail out!
If I can kind of talk over a little bit. Has anyone seen the modern Pearl Harbor movie?
No.
I saw part of it on TV, and it kind of has that look. But just to see a modern take on a World War II fighter fight, dog fight, just to see that and to see the Lucasfilm logo, I get chills because I absolutely love this historical era.
Pass a pilot's exam. Make it through flight school. Survive basic combat. We've done all of that.
I don't believe your boys have scored a single aerial kill.
It's damn hard to shoot down the enemy 100 miles behind the front lines.
What we do, how well we do it, does it matter?
And you all thought what?
You'd sign up and that'd be the end of 100 years of bigotry. Get your head up, son. You're fighter pilots.
We have a right to fight for our country, the same as every other American. We will not go away.
I can't afford the kind of losses my bombers have been suffering. Can you help save lives?
If you get us new planes, we can help your boys.
Nothing's difficult.
Everything's a challenge.
Through adversity to the stars.
From the last plane to the last bullet to the last minute to the last man, we fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
We fight.
At all costs, you protect the heavies.
Fighters, 4 o'clock. Stay with the bombers.
One bomber, that's 10 men. We count our victories by the bombers we get to their targets. By the husbands we return to their wives. By the fathers we get back to their children. Yes,
come on, Junior, bail!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight!
We fight?
We fight!
Wait, we fight?
Wait, are we sure about
it's
this?
Not a question.
It's not a question. it's not a question.
You're strapped in, son!
So, yeah, let me get your reaction, Mark, since you just watched that for the first time.
That's awesome, man. I can't wait to see that. Yeah, it's got the same flavor of Pearl Harbor, and it's escaping me right now, but James Franco was in it. They had a World War I like that where he was going over across the seas to fly little planes. I love those type of flying movies.
Well,
and in fact, I see this and I'm thinking, what, Return of the Jedi, the Endor scene with all the TIE fighters, just with little, you know, World War II planes instead.
That's a great way to describe it, because this is a modern take on really classic, awesome storytelling. I mean, this is what inspired George Lucas to do the original Star Wars Death Star run, was the old World War II and World War I footage. And so to see George Lucas's take on how he shoots a film, The Tuskegee Airmen, not to mention the actual story of the Tuskegee Airmen themselves, for anyone who doesn't know, well, first of all, you should, but they're the first African-American pilots ever, and they flew, the reason it's called Red Tails is that they would fly...
First African-American American military pilots.
Yeah, that's true to Craig, but they would fly bomber support, which is, of course, one of the most dangerous things you can do, because the heaviest targeted aircraft during World War II would be the bombers, because obviously that's the one that's going to do the most damage.
Not that we're history buffs or anything.
So if you have anti-aircraft batteries, if you're going to aim at a fighter pilot, it's going to be the bomber squadrons and their escorts. So it's an amazing historical story in itself, and of course it's George Lucas and Lucasfilm producing it. So I have extremely high hopes for this film, and maybe George Lucas will finally get that Oscar. I think this is best picture material. I don't know.
Well, the thing is like if it's ready to go, they really should have done a December release. That's when a lot of you get your last push of the year for your Oscar movies, and just to see the trailer and the feeling it evokes.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, like, I think it could have been up for something, but it'll probably, you know, it's just hard when you go through the rest of the year, when you start in January and you go from January till December, and there's, you know, there'll be hundreds of other movies come out. It's hard to stay fresh on the minds of the Academy. But I want to go really geeky real quick, if I may.
Mm-hmm. No, you're forbidden.
Fire away.
If you have a chance, go back and watch it again. And where the gentleman says, he makes a statement, stay with the bombers. That's what we've got to do. You know, about that time, there's some more planes flying by or whatever. And there is a sound effect stuck in there that sounded to me, just listening to it, very, very much from Star Wars, very much Millennium Falcon.
Ah, cool. Yeah, we'll have to go. That's, do you have a timestamp on that by any chance?
No, I don't, because I wasn't watching.
Oh,
I just heard it just now, and so I'm even loath to say anything about it because I couldn't look like an
idiot. I'll be coming through it.
You know, this is one of those projects that we have been hearing about as Lucasfilm fans for over a decade.
Really? You know, it's been that long?
It's been since like 89 or something like that.
It's been... You know, well, see, I didn't want to step out on a limb and go 20 years, but it has been since after Willow. And then when Star Wars came back out and George was making the rounds with the re-releases in 97, there was a little bit of talk about it, but then you got into prequel mode, and his whole thing after the prequels was, I'm not going to do Star Wars anymore. You know, I want to get Red Tails done. I've got some other indie films that no one's really going to like. You know, And this is another thing that because of the Clone Wars and because of all that's happening with Star Wars, whenever George Lucas was out doing any press or any talking about anything, it was all about would Star Wars come out in 3D, the Clone Wars cartoons, all this other stuff. And no one really asked him about Red Tails. And so when suddenly this thing is made and ready to go with the trailer, it's like, oh, it's done.
Wow,
we're going to see this thing.
It's Cuba Gooding Jr.
You know,
and he's awesome.
I'm really looking forward to it. And Riley, you mentioned, you know, that this was the inspiration. These type of aerial dogfights were the inspiration for the original Trench Run. In fact, and everyone knows this, so let me just go ahead and put that out there. That I know that everyone knows, but it has to be said anyway. When he was showing, like Spielberg and some of his other movie making friends, you know, the film, the special effects shots weren't ready, and he stuck in for the X-Wing fights, he stuck in those World War One footage and World War Two footage of those aerial dogfights to kind of give them an idea of what he was going for in space.
Yeah, and one thing you mentioned, the feeling that this trailer evokes, that is one thing that gives me a lot of hope about this movie. Riley mentioned, you know, it's Lucas, it's a good story, the trailer looks great, but the trailer has awesome dialogue. It looks like it has great acting.
We fight.
Great. Yeah.
We fight?
Great. It's not a question.
See, it would be for me, sister.
Okay.
I'm a nut for everything George Lucas, but even if George's name wasn't on this would be a movie I would be totally excited to
see.
I mean, it's anytime there's a history type movie, I'm right there. I want to check it out.
when people think Star Wars, they think great story, great special effects. We love it. But this movie looks like it has a great story. I mean, we all know or should know the Tuskegee Airmen. And we know it's George Lucas. It'll have great special effects. The trailer shows that off. But it also looks like it has great dialogue. I mean, it looks like it'll be an awesome movie all around.
Well, it looks like it's going to fit right into the vein, and I leave Pearl Harbor out of what the list of movies I'm about to say, because Pearl Harbor seemed to take so many liberties with the storytelling, not necessarily the day of Pearl Harbor, but because it was so much more about character and that sort of thing. You know,
and we know Lucas doesn't have to deal with that character either.
Right. But this seems like it's going to fit more right into the vein of those very authentic movies, like your Saving Private Ryan's, like your We Were Soldiers, you know, some of the more recent, but in the past 10 years, you know, these movies that have come out that have just really evoked, have reminded people. Band of Brothers, you know, the series that was on HBO, thank you, Mark. These things, you know, that really kind of remind people of The Greatest Generation. And so I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it just looks amazing. I mean, the trailer just looks amazing. And Bethany hit the nail on the head. The dialogue is superb.
Yeah, definitely. Really looking forward to Red Tails. We got a couple more stories that I'll breeze through. And then also, stick around, by the way, after the credits, there'll be a special Marvel-esque bit. No, there won't. we'll be interviewing Steve a little bit, talk a little bit about his podcasting career and stuff. But before we go any further, I'd also wanted to mention some things that have happened on our website, which has been remarkably active. No thanks to me. I never post anything there. I feel pretty guilty other than the episodes. But we've had both Pete Morrison from Lightsaber Rattling and Aaron Goins have been doing some contributions to the website. Pete did a remarkable roundup of Clone Wars Adventures, as the free Sony online game as it is right now, and pointed out some interesting little tidbits about Season 4. Let me just jump straight to the part, because Clone Wars Adventures has really been serving as kind of a bridge, evidently, between Season 3 and Season 4 as they're kind of introducing some storylines. So, yeah, definitely go ahead and check out Clone Wars Adventures on the website, StarWarsReport.com. Also, and a very popular and widely feedbacked, if I could verbify the word, article. Aaron Goins did the top 10 EU characters who could be in the Clone Wars, but probably never will be. And I actually highly recommend that you check this out. A lot of comic characters that I wasn't too familiar with. Some that I was and some that I wasn't. So another absolutely excellent article. I know, let me just tell you, Mark, pick one. If you just had to pick one from this list, or was there any ones that you would give honorable mention to that you would love to see?
Oh, man, Kruk all the way. I always have dug Kruk. Although seeing Asherod Het would be great, too. But, yeah, number six, Kruk. I would just love to see him back. I mean, he was in the Clone Wars Gindi series, so I could see him coming in. Of all of them, I could see him coming.
Yeah, that's
We're on the same page, Mark.
He's a good Jedi. Hey, sure. Because you've read Legacy, so, I mean, you know where I'm going with this guy. I mean, he's just got a special place in my heart.
Well, and I read, is he in Dark Times?
Is that what he's in? He's in Dark Times, Volume 2. That's he was also in the Republic Clone Wars from Dark Horse. He had a lot of page time there. And going all the way back to Council of War, I believe, was one of the first ones where we see him as a Padawan still.
Okay, I've read him in Dark Times, and I really like the character in Dark Times. I like the look. I like that look of that character. I think it's just a neat alien, and I think that to see that realized on the Clone Wars would be really cool.
Yeah, they can do Wookiees. They can do Kruk. Star Wars comics is something that I wish I kind of was more into. It just sometimes seems to be a bit of a deep pool, so to speak, to jump in. Because there's so many to choose from. But the ones I have read, I've really enjoyed. Legacy, Dark Times, those are the main two that I've read. And both are excellent. I would love to see Asherod Het.
The current trend is omnibuses. And I would, you know, put money down that sooner or later, everything you see in a trade paperback is going to wink its way to an omnibus. And those are actually not that expensive. I mean, when you think about what you're getting. Well, I'll bust one of those open, and I can't really read it in one sitting. I mean, I probably really could if I was desperate to, but I only get about 30 pages in, and I'm like, oh, man, this is great, but I'm ready to go and do some other things now. My legs are tired.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this special episode of Star Wars Report. Actually, they're all special. They're all special.
We're all special.
We're all special. Especially Mark. Especially Mark. thank you so much, Steve, for coming on. This has been a blast. As we'll get into after the credits, I've been listening to you for a long time, and I've always really admired the way you approach podcasting. So,
hush, keep going.
You're gone. And so, yeah, it's awesome to actually talk to you and actually have and listen to our little show here. That's kind of cool. It's the world, once again, I'll say it once, I'll say it many times. The world does seem to go in circles. I like Mark.
Well, duh, it's the Earth is round-ish.
Oh, Bethany.
I just have to tease him.
Oh, man. If you want to contact us, send us an email, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Hit us up on what you thought of the Red Tails trailer. Is it Oscar material? Will it jump in the minds of the golden gods up there in Hollywood? I don't even know who decides that.
I think it would fly in the minds.
Sure. Other ways you can contact us, Facebook and Twitter. Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. Twitter.com/StarWarsReport.
Tweet, tweet.
It's nice and easy to remember that way.
Tweet.
And don't forget our website where awesome people are actually continuing written content for it. Hopefully we'll be able to get even more. We need to get more writers. Hey, do you want to write for the Star Wars Report? Send us an email. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Report on Star Wars stuff. It's fun. Take my word for it. Also,
that's why you never do it.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Don't forget our forum in the EU Cantina forums. Go to the Solo Sound section. Find the Boston Spinet. We are interacting with our listeners there quite often. And most importantly, send us some reviews. Give us some iTunes love. That would be awesome. We want more and more people to hear about our little show here. And to do so, a great way is to send us some iTunes reviews. Preferably 5-star. We'll take any, but it'd be cool if you actually take the time to send us a review on iTunes or Zoom. And, of course, don't forget, we're also airing on Middle Earth Network Radio. I have no idea why. It's Lord of the Rings, but we're awesome that way. They just choose us.
They just like us.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Thanks once again for coming on. Stick around afterwards. Like I say, we're going to have a little bit of a post-show chat with Steve Lawson. Pick his brain a little bit. It's going to be fun.
Ew.
That's going to do it for this episode. For Mark, for Steve, I'm Riley.
I'm Bethany.
Say and remember.
I'm Mark.
Many Bothans died. Bring you this podcast. It always bothered me that that's off key at the end, by the way.
That's like the Bill Conti arrangement of the Star Wars theme.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It was going to be in Rocky, but they couldn't get it in there.
Yeah, we like our theme music. Although, that just one spot always bothers me. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Steve. This has been a blast, and I've been kind of sitting on some questions that I've been wanting to ask you, and we've got a long list of listener questions that have been... No, we don't.
No, you're not going to get people tuning in because you have Steve Lawson on the show. I can promise you that right now.
Well, nonetheless, I've heard you talk about it on some other shows, but what is your story? How did you first get into Star Wars? I'm curious.
Star Wars has always been with me. I was born on January 25th, 1977, and 5 months later, Star Wars hit. I had an older brother who was... 6 at the time I was born, and so, you know, all of his buddies and friends had seen it, and of course, you know, everyone was Star Wars crazy. That, you know, that was just the world at the time. It was the biggest thing ever to hit. It was such a surprise, and people were going back and seeing it multiple times. It was in the theater for so long, and so he just fell in love with it, and as did my older sister, and so, you know, I don't remember a time in my life where there wasn't Star Wars. Even as a 2-year-old, for Christmas, I was getting Star Wars figures so that I wouldn't mess with my older brother's stuff. You know, that's just the way my parents did things. They bought things in twos so that I wouldn't, because I had obviously snuck down to my brother's room, or not really snuck, just kind of toddled in there, I guess, and had messed in his stuff. And so, you know, for my 5th birthday, I believe it was, my mom went and rented Star Wars, and we watched Star Wars at my house, and, you know, birthday party with my friends. And, you know, she had to put down a $100 deposit on the VHS.
Wow.
You know, to be able to rent it. And it was just like crazy. And so it's always been just kind of a part of my life. I've just always loved it, which is weird because for a lot of other sci-fi stuff, I don't really get into that much. You know, I know you guys are big Battlestar fans, and I like the original Battlestar Galactica, the blatant Star Wars ripoff with the robot doll, and Face from the A-Team. But this new one, I watched the miniseries, and I was like, I just can't get into this. It doesn't feel, you know, I don't know. It didn't do it for me. And there's a lot of things like that when it comes to sci-fi, but Star Wars has always just kind of hit that special niche for me, and to the point that you know, even when Star Wars had kind of disappeared, I remember the last time I ever saw anything Star Wars in a store was right after Christmas, 1987, and it was just a TIE fighter sitting on a shelf at a Toys R Us, and my parents were good enough to get it for me, and after that, you never really saw anything Star Wars for the longest time until you know, for several years. And then I remember seeing on the bookshelf Heir to the Empire and just flipping out. But none of my friends were into Star Wars. No, you know, I had a poster on my wall my entire life, you know, a different poster. You know, whenever one would just be totally torn up, somehow I'd find a new one. And it just, you know, and so when it came back around, it was just great. And so, you know, it just kind of helps your fandom explode. But it's just always been there. You guys still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Go again, Bethany. I think the mic was muted. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I'm here.
I thought I heard you.
Kind of rude.
Yeah.
I heard something kind of going, but it was coming from Riley's mic.
Riley, yeah. Why are you Bogarting the mic, man?
Actually, when we first started podcasting, Austin over at U Canteen was like, "And Riley, get your sister her own mic."
We used to have one microphone between us. I kid you not.
And I'd have to fight him for it almost. But yeah. Well, since you've been a Star Wars fan for so long, Steve, what is something that stands out to you in your personal fan experience or something that stands out to you in the movies? Just a moment in time that is Star Wars related that stands out in your memories.
Wow, there are several. From my childhood, it would be when we went to see Return of the Jedi. I remember the first time I saw anything promoting Return of the Jedi on TV, and I got so excited. Apparently we had fancy company at the house that night because my parents were using the dining room, which was never used for dining unless there was fancy company. And I ran into where they were, and I'm like, Mama, there's a new Star Wars movie coming out. And I was just like so excited. And from that point, you know, I just was so stoked for this movie. And my family was kind of at that point, there were three kids in the family. And so, but we didn't do movies a lot. I was kind of ADD, ADHD kid. And so it was hard to take me out and about. But we went to see Jedi with a friend of mine from up the street who always came down, you know, who we were best friends or whatever. And it was me and the family going to see Return of the Jedi. And when we walked out that evening, it was Georgia Square Mall, Athens, Georgia. We walked out and the line was at the box office, down the corridor of the mall, out the door, down the sidewalk alongside this huge mall, across the parking lot, back up all the way up to the road, you know, and this is one of those malls where you have the huge, huge parking lot. I mean, these were people lined up to see Return of the Jedi. Wow. I don't know how my dad scored tickets to go. It was opening weekend and we were there, and it was just, you know, it was fantabulous. The other big thing that sticks out to me is in 1997, I was in college when the movies were re-released, the special editions were released, and I was just stoked to the gills about Star Wars in the theater. I got a group of people. I say a group. I ended up coordinating about 30 of us going to the theater in the town where I was at to see Star Wars. I made sure everyone had rides. You know, I went that afternoon and was willing to wait in line. Fortunately, I didn't have to wait in line, but I went and bought it, got money from everybody, went and got everyone's ticket. And there was a girl who I was kind of crushing on at the time. And looking back, knowing what I know now, she was kind of crushing on me. And so we went, so of course I'm like, you've got to come go see Star Wars. This is Star Wars, and you have to come see it with me. And so, so it was all exciting. So we're sitting next to each other in the movie theater, and she's like, I don't know if I'm going to understand this. I'm like, well, if you have any questions, just ask me. Oh. I had never seen, to my memory, this particular – I'd never seen A New Hope, as it were. I still call them Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Yeah. I'd never seen Star Wars on the big screen. And, the Fox fanfare plays, the Lucasfilm logo comes up, and then those big yellow words just – Star Wars, and then Episode 4, New Hope. And I'm reading the crawl as though I'd never read it before. I'm just – the Star Destroyer comes flying overhead, and it's just – I was just mesmerized by this movie. Well, about 45 minutes later, I felt a tiny little elbow in my side, and it was because I had apparently been ignoring all of her questions for the past 45 minutes. And so we never went out. And, what might have been had it not been for Star Wars. But nice. As one of my good friends has said, there are plenty of girls. There's only one Star Wars.
Okay. Amen, brother. Amen.
There's only one saga. See, when that came out, I caught it on the drive-in, the local drive-in.
That was, oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah, I was like, this guy, and we had a couple friends that their girlfriends had never seen it, so we're like, okay, all the girls are coming with us, we're going down, we're watching all the movies. It was pretty cool, because they played them all back to back to back, so it was like, you could sit there and you were up all night. It was cool.
Yeah, my first experiences with Star Wars were just so vague, because it was so permeated the culture by the time of, I remember being, growing up, we lived overseas back and forth in Pakistan, of all places.
Wow.
Yeah. My parents were missionaries there, so we'd be gone for a few years, and then we'd be back for a year, and then gone a few years, and they'd be back for a year on our leave. And so I remember coming back, and it was 1999, I think it was.
Mm.
And all these people were interested in Star Wars, and I had no idea what this Star Wars thing was. And there were Pepsi cans everywhere.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Every Pepsi can under the sun, as the song goes. But I just remember seeing Jake Lloyd's face being plastered everywhere and randomly naming
Taco Bell.
Yeah. Randomly naming my teddy bear Anakin, and I had no idea who Anakin was. I'm 8 years old at the time. So it was kind of odd for me, and I didn't see Phantom Menace that year, kind of forgot about Star Wars, and we were around, and we moved up to where we are here in Tennessee. What was it, 2003, 2004? It's before Revenge of the Sith. I think of things in terms of Star Wars release dates. You guys ever catch yourself?
Yes.
The yes, year was completely. Oh yeah, it must have been 2004, because we're still waiting for Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
But I remember being at my friend's house and him having these toy lightsabers, which I thought were the coolest thing ever.
Yes.
They're the really cheap ones. The ones that used to cost $5 that are like $9 now. I walked through a Target and I was shocked. No, this is a travesty. But he reenacted word for word the entire dialogue and sequence of the Phantom Menace Duel of Fates and instructed us as to how to do it since we'd never seen the movie. And then he taught us how to do word dialogue for dialogue, word for word, all of the duel and Attack of the Clones at the end. And he played Count Dooku because he was tall and dark-haired, and I played Yoda because I have no idea why. And then he played Anakin because she had long hair at the time, and so did Hayden Christensen. So evidently that made
good
her
reason.
Anakin. The logic of 11-year-olds is amazing. And so anyway, that was our first real exposure to what Star Wars was reenacting duels that we hadn't even ever seen on screen. And so I remember for the next year or so just begging for permission to finally watch Star Wars. Please, 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 can we watch Star Wars now? And our parents
were
like,
we
don't
have
time
now.
We're
going to
wait,
watch it with our parents.
So-and-so's not here. We want to watch it with the whole family. We want to make it a big event. Well, and so we finally got around to watching it. And
I'd already been spoiled as to who Luke Skywalker's father was, and a number of other things that I knew. I actually probably was more spoiled for the prequels than I was for the original trilogy. It's kind of weird how that works.
That is weird.
Because
Your parents knew the phenomenon of Star Wars, though.
Oh, yeah. They were okay. Star Wars fans themselves, particularly my older sister and my dad.
Okay.
Yeah. And they,
that's one reason why they all wanted to watch it with us.
It was special to them.
They wanted to make it an event.
We were all living in the same area, so it's like, no, we can't watch it yet. So-and-so's not here.
So it took a while, and then we finally did it, made a big event, and watched The Phantom Menace. That was the first Star Wars film we saw. And we actually split it into two evenings because it got to bedtime.
Nice.
And so our split-off point was immediately after, and help me, Bethany, if I'm wrong, I believe it was immediately after Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn's first confrontation, and they escape Tatooine.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that's it. And so that was our cut-off point, and we waited till the next evening to finish it. But
knowing your parents stayed up and finished it.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did.
But our Star Wars watching order was funny. We watched The Phantom Menace first, then we watched A New Hope, then we watched Empire Strikes Back, then we watched Attack of the Clones, then we watched Return of the Jedi, then we watched Revenge of the Sith.
Mm. Yeah, it was weird. We kind of watched it in order of content, in terms of like parental content. Revenge of the Sith was PG-13 was last. Return of the Jedi was right before it. You know, the more intense the film was kind of the order we watched it in. Phantom Menace just blew my, 13, 14-year-old's brain away. I still, I sometimes catch myself feeling guilty about it almost, because I know this isn't the film, it's not the classic film, but like at Celebration when we got to watch in a theater for the first time, for our first time, Celebration 5, see Star Wars on the big screen. That was a big deal for us, and seeing the Phantom Menace.
Where did you guys watch that on the big screen?
Oh, at Celebration 5 when they were holding those screenings. It was up in the...
I didn't know they were holding screenings at Celebration 5.
It was kind of terrible because they're holding digital screenings, but it was during the convention hour, so often it was conflicting with a big panel.
At Celebration 3, one of the greatest things that I did at Celebration 3 was we watched Empire because they were doing that. I didn't see that on the schedule.
Yeah, and it was.
Man.
So we saw, I think, three of them all the way through, and then would just stop in for 15 or 20 minutes to take a break.
Yeah.
It's a great way just to take a break from the convention.
Yes, I did that with the Clone Wars room.
Yeah, that, and they had screenings going there as well. It's just that experience of seeing it on the big screen, watching The Phantom Menace, the moments of the pod race would recall my thrills of first seeing and the intensity of whether or not Anakin was going to pull it through and make it away from Sebulba. And those are moments when I forget that I'm not supposed to like the pod race because it's so boring and repetitive and everybody knows.
Oh my gosh, don't, See, I was 22 years old sitting in the theater the night after opening night. I didn't get to go to open night to Phantom Menace. I was sitting in the theater, and when Anakin hits that ramp, the off ramp, and he gets launched into space, and he just kicks it into high gear and comes down in front of Sebulba, I audibly went, yes!
Yeah!
I was into it, and I was 22. Here's the thing about The Phantom Menace. You've got a bunch of people who built up for, 16 years what the prequels would have been or could have been or may have been, and they turn that in their minds to this is what it should be. And you can't live up to 16 years of expectation on anything.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of stuff that was more off-putting to people, and their response was, I don't like this. But I came out of that theater. We went to McDonald's right after we saw it, and we grabbed straws and were lightsaber fighting in McDonald's with straws because it just kind of, and I'm a 22-year-old guy at this point. I'm not really a kid. I'm just don't even get me started on idiots.
Yeah. And I do catch myself where I'm like, that was my experience, and that's something that's really important to me, and it was a big part of my childhood. But, I mean, before I saw it, like I said, playing lightsaber battles with my friends, reenacting these fights, that's a defining part of my childhood. And so I always get disappointed when I'm told by everyone around me, and there are moments when it feels like that I shouldn't like this film, or
right.
this is cheesy. And so it's easy, because as a 19-year-old now, and I kind of look back, well, that scene kind of, the dialogue's not the best in that scene, and then so I can see why people would, and then I catch myself and say, no, I mean, I really enjoyed that film. That film is part of what inspired me as a kid, and so I think that there are many others like myself that are hiding away in the closet, so to speak. And that's something I really want to do through the Star Wars Report, especially if you're a younger listener. If you like the Clone Wars, if you like the Phantom Menace, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep. And perspective matters, too. I mean, I've always been curious, because you guys, Riley and Bethany, you guys watched in such a crazy order. You know, because when I thought about how am I going to show my kids, it never crossed my mind that I would ever do it 1, 2, 3, because it just, for me, it's like that ruins the reveal in number 5. I just can't do that. So they had to watch it, you know, in the order I watched it. But I've always wondered, you know, there's other fans out there who did it 1 through 6, and you know, they come away with different things they liked or disliked, and due to the way they watched it. And you guys watched it in such a crazy sporadic way, and you guys came away loving it, which I've always been, you know, curious to. Because, like, you know, I think about, you know, Steven mentioned with Battlestar Galactica, he didn't really care for it. I loved it, but then again, I only remember watching maybe 2 episodes of Battlestar Galactica when I was a kid. I don't remember ever catching that show, because I lived out in the sticks. We didn't get that channel. So, you know, I had nothing for it to compare to, so I absolutely loved it. And I think about that when I'm watching, or I'm watching fans' reactions to things, because it's like sometimes, you know, like Steve said, people have such expectations that it just totally ruins it for them, and they can't get around that.
And they did it for every single one of the prequels, though. And that was kind of frustrating to me as someone who was just enjoying the ride, is for each one the expectation and the anticipation got so high that for whatever reason they'd come away hating on what had happened. They didn't like Jake Lloyd. They didn't like Hayden Christensen. They didn't like, but you know, it's. But what I have found is, Mark, is my friends. I actually have friends that had never seen the movies at all.
Yeah.
And so I made it my goal in life to introduce them to the movies. And I introduced them 1 through 6. And
they liked it?
Well, because everyone has heard. I mean, it's part of the culture, Luke, I'm your father. And yeah. So when we'd sit down to watch, you know, the first thing they'd be like, so now this is where that Darth Vader guy is Luke's dad, right? You know, and it's like that. And I told him, like, that doesn't come till way later on from what I'm showing you. And wow. We'd start with episode 1, and they'd find something they would latch onto in episode 1 that they just absolutely loved, whether it was Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. I've got a friend that absolutely loves Jar Jar. You know, the story of Anakin. I've got a friend that totally buys into the Anakin Padme love story. And when we watched episode 3, she was depressed. She's like, does he turn good? Is he going to turn good? I'm like, he's Darth Vader. He's the most evil man in the galaxy. You know, I didn't want to ruin anything. And so the thing is, it's like what you find out is this story resonates with people. The tragedy of Darth Vader resonates with people. And it's not about the big reveals. For those of us who grew up with it, that big reveal is huge, because we didn't have the first half of the story. But yeah, the saga as a whole, I'll be honest with you, we were watching, I had a friend who'd never really watched Star Wars as episode 3 was getting ready to come out, and so I just showed her episode 1 and 2, and we had kind of a viewing, me and a group of friends watched episodes 1, episode 2, and then we all went as friends to see Revenge of the Sith, and when Palpatine reveals himself to be the Sith Lord, she was shocked.
That's what I was thinking, yeah, because there's a lot of people that thought he had a twin brother.
Yeah.
Really? And
you mentioned, you know, how she thought about, you know, oh, is he going to turn to Darth Vader? That never even crossed my mind. But when you just mentioned that just totally changes the significance of the prequel trilogy in that regard. I mean, you can watch it either way, in either direction, there's going to be big reveals for each trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't even really thought about it that deep because I knew what was coming.
Yeah. Well, did you guys, Bethany and Riley, did you guys go to the panel at C5 appreciating the prequels?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, with Kyle Newman and some of those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they put so many things into words and perspectives that I could not even come close to having the thought. Like when Kyle Newman made the point that the prequels are the rise of the dark side and the original trilogy is the rise of the light side. You know, and it's just it if you take it all in as a whole story, it's a great, that's the point. You know, Bethany, you said it earlier in the show, you said it's a great story, period. And if you have problems with character moments or that sort of thing, I still say if you watch Hayden Christensen's performance, a lot of people give him a lot of junk, but if you watch his performance in particularly episode 3, the cadence and the way that he speaks is very there's a purpose to it, because the cadence and the tone of his voice and the way he speaks very much flows into the way Darth Vader speaks. Of course, it's not James Earl Jones's timbre, but it is the way he forms sentences, the way he forms, you know, it's very premeditated in the line delivery.
Ewan McGregor did the same thing with the three films.
Yeah. And you could take some of Hayden's lines in episode 3 and put the James Earl Jones, like just imagine James Earl Jones as Darth Vader saying them, and you're like, yeah, that's Darth Vader saying those things.
Yeah.
I
can hear it, actually. You're right, especially with Ewan and Hayden. The immolation scene, it's just,
yeah,
just the dialogue, the back and forth right there is unmatched really in any other part of the prequels, in my opinion. That scene right there literally tears your heart out. But it doesn't if you haven't bought into the story. I've talked about this on air before. It all depends on whether you've actually bought into the story. Are you in it? Are you taking it for what it is instead of what you want it to be?
I didn't realize how much I had bought into the story until I saw that scene. You know, when he's like, "You are the chosen one," you know, and I begin to choke up. You know, I'm like, I didn't think I was this invested in Anakin, even knowing what was coming, even knowing what was happening, you know, to see. And then, you know, and of course, everyone asks the big question. It's like, so he just left him there to burn, huh? I'm like, well, yeah, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's a question, and this is something I've mulled over off and on, privately and not privately, but what? I'm sure you guys have met people who have seen Star Wars, most of the Star Wars movies, and haven't really liked any of them. They're just not Star Wars fans. Would you draw any connections to why they may or may not like Star Wars to connections to fans who liked the original trilogy but then said the prequels ruined everything, or who maybe newer fans who like the prequel trilogy but don't like the original trilogy? What sort of... I'm trying to figure out, because sometimes there seems to be a little bit of a pattern where Riley mentioned expectations, where you have it, and Steve, you mentioned this too, you have expectations of something, it doesn't fit up to your expectations, so it disappoints you. But the people I've met who don't particularly like Star Wars and have never been a Star Wars fan, they tend to talk about expectations too, oddly enough. Where the story didn't quite meet up to them, or it was too... They're not into science fiction, so the science fiction aspect of it is too distracting to them.
I think for people who just generally don't like Star Wars, it comes down to that's not their cup of tea. You're also going to find that they don't like things like Lord of the Rings. You're going to find that they're not going to watch Star Trek. You're going to find that they're more into your straightforward type movies and literature and that sort of thing. They might enjoy a good Tom Clancy novel. You know, they might enjoy, but when you start to put the science fiction or fantasy trappings on it, it just kind of, they don't, I don't want to say they have a lack of imagination, but they're not willing to go down that road. When it comes to fans of the prequels, or the original trilogy rather, who grew up with it, and you need to understand, I think, that that at the end of the day, Star Wars shaped so much of pop culture from 1977 on. it shaped the way movies were done. It shaped the way movies were released. It shaped the way people thought about, you know, summer blockbusters. It completely shook the foundation of what Hollywood was. And it was at a time when, you know, quite frankly, there wasn't much going on to that extent. You know, the biggest, the most successful sci-fi movie at that point had been 2001: A Space Odyssey. And, you know, it's a thing where it captured the imagination of kids. Teenagers liked it, so it was cool. You know, people were painting Star Wars on the sides of their vans. It was something that spanned generations. A five-year-old kid. I had a friend. I say he was a friend. He was a dude that went to our church. And understand, here I am, a six-year-old kid, and this guy was a teenager. You know, 15, talked to me because I was into Star Wars. You know, and that's what Star Wars did to people who were into it. And you didn't even you weren't a geek if you liked Star Wars. Everybody just liked Star Wars, period. But what happened is over the years you kind of ended up separating those of us who have that addictive personality, I guess, like I have, where I got into it and I stayed into it, you know, and it was the same way with comic books and other kind of geeky things. You have the people who were like me who kind of stayed into it and were kind of passionate about it. And you have the people who just kind of grew up. And I don't say that to dog on any of us who didn't, quote unquote, grow up. But I say that there are a lot of people who their passions and their drives took them down other roads and other hobbies and stuff. And they remember fondly as a child enjoying this stuff. There's also a part of them that remembers just how big it is. Wow, I'm really getting deep into this. Just how big a deal it was. And so when 1999 rolls around, and here are these new Star Wars movies, they're not a kid anymore, you know? And so it doesn't quite capture their imagination the way that it once did. But also with that, you've got to understand that, you know, a year later after Star Wars, You Will Believe a Man Can Fly, Superman the movie was released. And then throughout the 80s, you had Empire and Return of the Jedi, but throughout the 80s, you had more and more movies. And then you hit the 90s with huge hits like Jurassic Park, and you've got all the, you know, the Independence Day and all of these big blockbuster movies that since 1977 to 1999, in that 22-year span, were made and released that just blew you away bigger and bigger every time. Well, here comes Star Wars, and quite frankly, the nuances of the technology and everything were so... they weren't as in your face as what the original one was. So there wasn't that moment that just caused the collective mass to catch its breath. Yeah. The way that a Star Destroyer flying over screen did in the original Star Wars. And I think a lot of people were just disappointed that they didn't catch that same sense of wonder and nostalgia they did as a kid. The thing about The Phantom Menace, though, is it has aged very well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the past 12 years. It has really aged well. A lot of people who hated on it in the beginning have begun to soften to it and understand kind of what was going on. I'm sorry, Darth Maul is an iconic character. That double-bladed lightsaber became immediately as iconic as anything else in the Star Wars universe. Qui-Gon Jinn has become one of the most beloved characters in the Star Wars saga. And so for people to trash it the way they do... the same people that are trashing Phantom Menace have a bust of Darth Maul sitting on a shelf somewhere. Yeah. And so I've always said it's a little bit, you know, from the Star Wars fan perspective, it's a little bit disingenuous to say, well, I just can't stand the prequels. Well, yeah, you can, because you've got your Jango Fett armor hanging in the closet, and you know, you've got your Darth Maul bust over there, and you have your double-bladed Force FX lightsaber hanging above the door. You love the prequels. You just want to be like everyone else. There became this collective cry of George Lucas has lost it. George Lucas has raped my childhood. George Lucas can't do what he used to do. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. Phantom Menace in its own way was groundbreaking. Yeah. You know, the realization of digital environments and digital characters. How much more has that come into play now in 2011, 12 years later?
Actually, I'm curious. Sorry to cut in here, but...
No, that's fine. I'm talking too much.
No, that's fine. You just... I was really interested then. I had an idea. You were mentioning people who had an outcry of George Lucas has lost it, essentially. He's lost whatever touch he had. The universe has become bigger than... You know, the universe is too big for George now, that sort of thing. I wonder if, depending on how big of a hit Red Tails is, what sort of reaction people will have to that. Imagine that Red Tails is a smashing hit, a number one blockbuster hit. Everyone loves it. The critics love it. The fans love it. Basically, people just love it. That, in a way, will kind of... How, if you are a person who are saying, well, George Lucas is just kind of, he hasn't got it anymore. I wonder what Red Tails will do to perhaps counteract that thought.
I think, well, first off, you know, you understand George didn't direct Red Tails.
Yeah.
Which I think is key. He was of course a producer. Did he write it, guys? Do we know that?
He did write it. Yes.
And I think that's going to be the key. I think the writing is going to be key when people begin to realize, oh, he was going for something completely different in Star Wars. See, the thing about the dialogue, Riley, you mentioned the dialogue of Star Wars earlier. The thing about the dialogue of Star Wars in the prequels, it does come off as cheesy. But had it not been for Harrison Ford, and had it not been for the earnestness of Mark Hamill in the original trilogy, you still had that cheesy dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, it's very. When you start speaking, you know, when you hear Vader and the Emperor talking, and you hear the conversations they're having with one another, and that confrontation between Luke and the Emperor on the Death Star, it's very dramatic and it's very big and it's very verbose, but it's also very much nothing like people talk.
Yeah.
And so I think that what you'll see, hopefully what we'll see, and I think we've seen a little bit of it just from the trailer of Red Tails, is I think we'll see that George Lucas can still write. He can still tell a story, and he can still write some dialogue that is appropriate for the material.
Yeah, he did the screenplay. I think he was a producer as well. But yeah, George Lucas and John Ridley both did the writing. Now, George Lucas wrote the story. John Ridley adapted George Lucas's story to the screenplay. According to IMDb, my friend here. at IMDb, I don't know all that off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Well, it's been such an awesome conversation so far. I know, Mark, you're having to head out just about now.
Yep, it's time for this one to put his lightsaber away and climb back into his shuttle and lift off.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go ahead and begin to bring this episode to a close. But what an awesome post-show chat.
I'm sad now.
I know.
Oh, Riley, you guys can continue. There's so much more.
I still want to talk to you about you guys.
That's right. Okay. You guys got to carry the Uber Geek torch. Just because one Uber Geek's leaving does not mean that the geeks have all left the house.
There you go. Yeah. We'll go ahead and let you head out, Mark, and then we'll wrap up in a few minutes. But, Steve.
All right.
Yes.
I wanted to open up the opportunity if you wanted to ask us some questions as well. We don't want to grill you the entire time.
Hey, Mark, have you left yet?
Not yet. No, I'm still here.
Well, real quick, I want to, because this has turned into, as it happens all the time with Star Wars conversations, it's turned into kind of a prequel versus original trilogy thing. How do you, and I know you're a big EU guy,
mm-hmm.
How much do you think the EU has contributed to kind of the disdain that a lot of people have for the prequels?
Ooh. Oh, I want to say that there is a good level of it, but for the
and
most part...
I don't
part,
mean in terms of having to retcon things.
Go ahead.
I guess what I'm saying is in terms of, you know, for X amount of years, we were reading the novels, we were, you know, absorbing all of these books, and when you're reading these things, when you know, I think of the Thrawn trilogy, which is outstanding, you know, I think of... I think of all the journey, because up until that point, you know, everything was pretty much post-Jedi.
Yeah.
There's all these journeys that people take, and there is an exploration of what is the Force, what were the Jedi, all this stuff. And by the time you hit 1999, had Star Wars, I guess, through the EU gotten too adult?
Well, I want to say the novels, definitely. The comics, Dark Horse, they were definitely going in the same direction as the prequels came out. And I think, you know, there was a percentage of the EU fans that got to know what had came out in the post stuff, that as the prequels came out, they caused these conflicts. I mean, for me, I liked them. They were kind of like treasures. You know, oh, look, we found another spot where it doesn't quite line up. Oh, we got to find a retcon for it. But you know, that not everybody takes it as a fun challenge, you know, right. and you got those vocal, you know, not all of them are the minority, but you know, as an EU fan, we are the minority. And so no matter how loud the ones that really hate something get, I mean, they only get as much attention as everyone else really gives it. I mean, I if I see somebody really trashing on something Star Wars, I don't listen to it. You know, that's my thing. But there was a large group, you know, and I think of the forums, the official site forums, that, you know, people would just, there are certain things that they would always come back to. And I come back to certain things that irk me, but I do it tongue in cheek. You know, R8, that's my big thing right now. I just like to poke fun at R8. But, you know, there was definitely a venomous group, you know, and then you had the other side of that where when the whole Karen travesty happened, when Karen Travis left and the Clone Wars did what they were doing with the Mandalorians and that group of fans getting riled. And then you had the group of fans that were like, well, you know, we've been hating on the prequels this whole time, so just join our bandwagon. So it's kind of like, you know, I always say life is about circles, but that's what it was for me in fandom. It was like you're watching like one group that had a grievance with Boba Fett not being the same from the Marvel's comic into the next one. You know, they were just like, well, now you've got something to understand why we're mad. And, you know, and people would ride that in fandom, and you'd watch some fans kind of like within 3 years kind of start to lean that direction, or they would go the other direction and just start to love everything and just be like, you know, I just take it for what it is at this point and I just love it all, you know. Or you'd have those ones that would just start to get bitter about it. And yeah, they were there, but I don't know if they necessarily, you know, added to the haters, I guess. I don't know exactly if I've answered your question, but.
Oh, sure. You went off on a nice little rant, sir. I wanted to get one out of you on this show. You've been so quiet and reserved. I'm kind of disappointed.
I have been, indeed. I've got a lot on my plate. I mean, I just recently found out my wife was pregnant, which I guess this is the actual announcement of that. But
yes.
Hey!
Yeah, so,
yeah.
So, yeah, I've been all excited, and she came home halfway through the show, so I've been like, oh, I'm listening to the podcast. I got to, what are you going to, okay.
So. Yeah, we'll let you get back to your family duties, but thanks for coming on, Mark. It's been a pleasure, as always.
All right, guys. So with that, me and Whistler, we're out.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
Take care. And Steve, once again, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.